Welcome to Inclusion Catalyst with your hosts, Mickey Desai and Susan Cooper. We invite diversity leaders to the table to deconstruct complex social justice issues and showcase the best inclusion practices in our workplaces and our communities.
Welcome to the Next Pivot Point podcast. This season, I'm focused on sharing stories and ideas from experts on diversity and inclusion. In this episode, we're going to share some insights and ideas from my guest expert, who's joining us back again for this season, Erica Young. And together, we're going to leave you with some actionable tips to take and discuss with your organization. We share this information because inclusive leadership is a journey. It requires bravery and courage, and you do not have to do it alone. At Next Pivot Point, I believe we're stronger together. We are one. So let's welcome Erica back.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, our conversation on unpacking privilege, we recorded well before the pandemic, well before George Floyd, well before the resurgence of Black Lives Matter. And so we had to have a part two to this conversation.
Absolutely. This is the right time right now.
Well, Erica, from your vantage point, so Erica is an activist. She's an advocate for equality. She talks especially to a lot of white people about racism, and we partner together on facilitating workshops on privilege and unpacking racism. So we're going to talk about it from that perspective, have a good conversation on what we're seeing. So let's start with what have we learned? So it's been about 40 days since George Floyd's passing, and obviously the amount of media attention and just the flock of conversation around Black Lives Matter has been very different than past conversations about this. So from your vantage point, what have we learned in the last 40 days?
Well, honestly, I've learned that we have all been in the dark. Our educational system has not given us a lot of tools to help us support the idea of systemic racism. And I think a lot of white people in particular are waking up and saying, oh my gosh, I had no idea. So there's a lot of eye-opening going on. A lot of people are researching their history and trying to understand why the heinous act against George Floyd occurred and why our system is made up so different for different races of people. And I think it's a good exploration. And I think that that healthy regard for learning is vital. So I've learned that there are a lot of people who care, and I'm hopeful about that. I'm thankful for that. And people are taking action in their small ways. So that's good. That's a good place to start for sure.
Yeah, I agree. The amount of white people that said, why didn't I learn this in school? That's something you and I teach, the history, Black history, when we give our talks on privilege and unpacking racism. And there's always this like, women of color didn't get the right to vote until 1964. Like, I didn't know that.
Exactly.
And exactly. I just learned recently that a Black woman ran for president in 1972. And I'm a women's studies minor. I mean, this is embarrassing.
Yep.
It almost feels intentional that these facts are kept from us.
Yeah. And I think that the history books are set up to reduce, minimize, and sometimes hide the hard parts of our history. We make it look pretty. And we have, you know, Black History Month. Isn't that enough? And the sad part is, even with Black History Month, a lot of students aren't learning anything new. It's just an observance to say that we're checking the box. And so I think for a lot of people, they're trying to change that. I'm really thankful that, you know, Juneteenth became a really big thing where, you know, the freed slaves finally found out they actually had their freedom 2.5 years after it was put into law. And so that became a much bigger thing this year. A lot of people didn't realize what that was. And to be honest with you, that isn't, as a Black person, I didn't even know that until I was an adult. So, we're all waking up, and I love that. I just hope it stays. That's really my hope, is that I hope that this isn't a moment, that this truly is a movement towards a better life, honestly, for our kids and everyone that comes after us.
I love that. And that was something that your 20-year-old asked of you recently.
Yeah, it is. So I was having a conversation with her. She's a junior, a rising junior in college. And, you know, I was wrestling with, do I talk about this? Is this important in a specific scenario? And she said, Mom, keep bringing it up. Keep bringing it up. And I thought, oh, that is so good, because if it's important to you, if you're passionate about it, if this matters, if it makes a difference, if you can make a difference, keep bringing it up. And I've used that now for a couple of weeks, because in different areas of my life, if it's important, keep bringing it up. Keep trying to answer the call that is right in front of you in terms of this matters, this moment matters. We can't let people off the hook. We have to keep bringing it up and mm-hmm. hold folks accountable.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's very much where we're at today. You know, with the COVID coming back into the news cycle, it's replacing some of the Black Lives Matter content that was really being, I mean, it was amazing. I had never seen that amount of content sustained for so long in our news cycle.
Yeah.
So I was getting really excited, but then I was also like, I know how this goes. It's a roller coaster ride. There's going to be the downside to it. And I'm pleasantly surprised. I think my vantage point from corporate America and the leaders I'm talking to about this, the conversation feels very different. So having only done this work for 6 years, but having been in corporate America before, you know, it was a hush, hush. We don't talk about this.
Mm-hmm. Right.
6 years ago. Then now it's like, oh, okay, we need to bring our full humans to work. So we'll have some sort of employee resource group conversation and Black right. History Month talk, you know, and it's just, it's okay to sprinkle. But now I'm hearing words like intentional. We want to be intentional with this long-term. We want to have a diversity inclusion plan, which big companies have done because they know any strategy or cultural transformation needs a plan. But the small to medium-sized ones haven't done that before. And I'm having organizations with 8 people come to me and say, we have a D&I plan. Like, that's yeah. pretty exciting. And then most recently, a very senior white male shared some of his stories with me about how this, he was on his own journey and how he'd been awoken previous to this and read books and, you know, all the things that we talk to people on podcasts, get right. educated, because the system's not going to educate you. Get educated. But then he said, the conversation we're having as an organization is we are going to end systemic racism. And I thought, whoa,
that's major.
That is not something I've heard before in corporate America. I'm happy for you. That seems big. And he said, yeah, you know, when we wrote that down in our plan, I felt overwhelmed by that because that's a big ask. But then as we started boiling down our role in that, you know, who we give back to, how we spend time in the communities, how we empower our channel partners, how we set processes in the employee experience, we absolutely have something to do with that in our community, in the sure. community we serve. And if only more corporations looked at it that way, what would be possible?
Absolutely. I think that's really big. I think that we need to have a goal that seems out of reach. You know, honestly, because that's how big this is. That's just how huge it is. So I'm really glad that people are taking some major steps, or, you know, maybe some big bodacious, right, goals here, because that's what it's going to take for us to really bring this system down and to have what we really think is true equality. It's going to take some massive effort and consistency. I think for me, the biggest word is to be consistent. Let's not allow this to die out. Let's find something that's going to be in place for the long term and continuously improve. Because if we do that, then, you know, we're changing with the times and making certain that what works today or what successes we see today are sustainable, even as we, you know, get better as people.
Yeah. Yeah, keep on talking about it. So listeners, that is one action item. Keep talking about it.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm having trouble with that, Erica, because I keep thinking about it and I can't stop thinking about it. And we were talking about this is how to know when is it's too much, or, you know, when the person you're talking to isn't really on the same page as you, what to say. And that's probably the biggest question I get. is everybody has a family member or somebody that's really struggling with this, right? And they're saying and doing things that are unhelpful. Things like all lives matter, for example. And oh, racism is over. I don't see color. We know all of the real microaggressions that white people, in fact, are still displaying as if it's okay.
Yep.
You know, and that's something we teach when we talk about unpacking racism and unpacking privilege, of how to be helpful, how to be an active ally. And when you see something, say something.
Sure.
And I know something you've shared that I've learned from previously is our job isn't to educate everybody else. Mm-hmm. But telling somebody it's not okay when they say something inappropriate is absolutely fair.
Absolutely.
And what would you add, you know, for people that are struggling with how to talk about this, when to talk about this, what to say when the person says something wrong?
Well, first of all, I honestly, in this moment, as a Black person, I honestly have to think about self-care. Like, is now the right time? I mean, first of all, am I in the right mental space to be able to have this conversation? And so sometimes you just have to assess, is now the right time? And then you kind of have to go deeper and say, if it is, yes, the right time, you've got some time. Like, this isn't a 5-minute conversation and you can actually, you know, do a little work with someone. It's, you know, how ready are they? Like, what are they really looking for? What do you want to get out of this conversation? Do you want advice or do you want to listen? Are you looking for education? Are you looking for resources? I think it's really appropriate and fair game to say, what are you looking for in this conversation? So that you approach it in the right way. And, you know, I think you also need to think about, is this person ready for what's next? I think we kind of have to sit there and think, everybody's different and we can't look at everybody at the same level. You and I have some deeper conversations and I'm able to share some things with you that I certainly wouldn't be able to share with someone that doesn't have our kind of relationship. And I think that's a fair thing to do. Sometimes these people aren't ready and sometimes you don't have the time to kind of get into it. And I think it's also okay to say, hey, how about we talk about this at this point? How about you read this article? Or what do you think about this particular instance that occurred? Mm. And just stay focused on one thing at a time, keeping in mind that we're not going to save the world, right? But one person at a time makes a big difference. Don't let things slide that make you uncomfortable. And the other part of this is get comfortable with being uncomfortable. Like, that's the beauty of where we are right now, is that everybody feels sweaty palms. Everybody is having a little bit of trepidation. Everybody is, their mind is blown by some of the things that they're learning. And so you're in good company. And so we're all uncomfortable. Yeah. I mean, honestly, who really wants to talk about racism? Like, it's a very ugly and nasty situation and subject. So since we're all doing it, you're in the in crowd. Like, I think that's something that can help you just think through this. Like, okay, you don't have to have all of the answers. You're never going to be exactly right in some of your responses. And I'd say in some conversations, just preface it and say, I don't know if this is the right thing to ask or the right way to ask this. So please give me grace on this, but I'm really curious. And I think coming from a place of curiosity and coming from a place of, I just want to learn and I want to be respectful of who you are and where you are in life. And with that type of humble attitude, I think you're going to have a really good foundation for a good conversation, I think.
Yeah. Well, you say that so well, curiosity. Stay curious. And in saying it in a conversation, I'm curious. Mm-hmm. I may not get this right. I may not say this the right way. Here's what I'm thinking. Here's what's on my mind. It reminds me of some of our earlier conversations. I don't feel like I have to preface that now with you because of our relationship. But I had to earn that, to your point. And you always remind me of that. Like, you couldn't come out of the gate with like, hey, Erica, you know, what's up with your hair? You know, it's in a lot of white people just go right for those things.
Yes.
And the reason that's so troubling is because it's very tokenizing to people that are different. So have grace, have some framing in that conversation, take some deep breaths, slow down the conversation. I noticed when the tempo goes up, people get emotional. They can't think as clearly. And then you're right. It's not going to land in the right way. So just knowing, what do we want to get out of this conversation? And baby steps are better than big ones. And especially too, I think having grown up in the 80s and 90s, my vantage point is a little different than I think as I'm talking with people that are in the baby boomer generation, very different relationship with race. And that's been a personal struggle for me. Family members that just really are like, it's better than it used to be. Like, not sure that's the bar of success we should be measuring.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I think that's really fair too, to the generations see it very differently. My conversations with my mother, for instance, are very different. And I recently had a conversation with her about the riots in Detroit. That's where she grew up back in the 60s. And, you know, her vantage point, she was 20. She's the same age as my daughter during those riots. And it was just kind of interesting to hear her perspective and let it lie. Let them talk. Like, if you're asking questions, just let it be. Don't critique it. Just let that be interesting. Let it be good for information, because the learning process is huge. And I learned a lot in that conversation. The same goes for having conversations with your teenagers. Let them talk. My kids taught me, Mom, you always interrupt. You always think you know it. Like, they don't want to say it that way, but that's what they're saying, because I think my experience is valuable to them. But really, they want to know they're being heard. And I love what the kids are doing right now. I love that they're finding safe spaces to talk about where they've had microaggressions so that their schools can be better and the teachers can be better and they can find safe spaces to, you know, in their circles. Like, I think that's huge. So I've learned that even with my kids and their generation, just to be a participant, like be a willing listener. And that has taught me a lot, because they're smart and they're learning all this alongside us as well, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Listening. Listening is one of the most important things. I had a very uncomfortable conversation with a family member, someone I deeply care about. And she said, you know, I just don't see racism. And I took a big, deep breath and thought, okay, what do I want to accomplish? Right.
Yeah.
I don't want to get in a fight and I'm not going to change your mind. So I'm going to listen. And I said, what makes you say that?
Yep.
And she went on and I asked another question and another question, just listened for about 20 minutes. And at the end of it, she said, I'm so thankful you listened to me, because I feel like most people don't listen to that perspective right now. Mm-hmm. And then she was willing to listen to mine a bit.
There you go.
And I just dropped a few little knowledge bombs that I've picked up from you along the way. And I think one of the analogies that works really well when we teach this is the house analogy. So we taught recently Unpacking Racism workshop, which we planned to do in May.
Yes.
And then of course COVID. Anyway, we got it rescheduled, but we were happy to do it. Really great response to that. And there was this one moment, Erica always teaches me something when we're teaching together. And I said, all lives matter. You can't say that. You know, yeah. I was just really vocal about it. It's wrong. And your response to that was so great. She said, you can say that, but here's the problem with that.
Right.
And how you reframed that was so good, because it's really polarizing to a white person that said, well, all lives matter.
Yeah.
Right. But your response.
And I think that's the thing is, everybody knows that we want all lives to matter. We, I think, can agree that everybody's life should matter. But if Black lives aren't mattering today because we see the system that is set up against Black lives, that's where the movement Black Lives Matter came from. And, you know, it's that the analogy that you're speaking of is the house that's on fire in the neighborhood. Of course, you want the fire trucks to come rushing and you want them to put this fire out, but do you expect the fire trucks to spray every single house in the neighborhood? No. Sure, all of the homes matter, but right now, this house is the one that's on fire. And so it's the one that we want to put the fire out. And so that's why Black Lives Matter. That's exactly why is the other houses are fine today, and this one's on fire. Literally, our homes have been on fire. So I think that when people see it that way, all lives can't matter until Black lives truly do in all spaces. That's where it comes from. And, you know, I honestly saw that a white male had the poster up at a protest that said, all lives can't matter until Black Lives Matter. And I was like, I just said, thank you. I had my mask on. He couldn't see my words, but I said, thank you.
Yeah, which is a really salient topic, is how we get white men involved in this conversation. Yeah, because until, sure, I firmly believe this with my work with gender, until we get men involved, they're the decision makers. 93% of CEOs are white men. Mm-hmm. It's who makes decisions, and they feel really uncomfortable right now. So framing analogies, like the metaphors, those types of sentence constructs, it really does. Those are helpful tools to engage the majority group that somehow just doesn't feel like it's their place to talk about this, and really is.
Well, and I think that it doesn't matter to you until it matters to you. And like it's almost like it doesn't matter until it's personal for someone in that regard. And it hits home. It's a family member or a friend, or, you know, they can't unsee it because it's right there in front of them. It's their neighbor, or they're like, oh, I had no idea. Like, you had no idea because you had a choice to have no idea. And so it's got to become personal for them to actually get involved. And of course, if your life is fine and perfect, you are concerned about any disruption to that by being a part of equality for someone else, right? Mm-hmm. There's the fear that something in your life is going to change, and not for good, if you help somebody else's life get better. And we have to break that notion down and say all of our lives aren't the best that they could be if we're not equal. That's the bottom line.
Oh, good. Yeah, it's not a zero-sum game.
Yep.
The pie gets bigger when we work together. It's not my slice versus your slice. There's mm-hmm. not, it's not about what I'm going to lose. It's about what we're all going to gain together.
Yep.
Very well said. And I think that's what we're saying, is protecting that power, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, you want to hold on to it as long as you can, but it's not working well for you, I promise.
Right.
It can work better for all of us. And you just feel so much better getting engaged in this work when you really get curious and have these conversations. I know for me, the reason I continue to do it, even though it is stressful, is it makes me a better human. It makes mm-hmm. me a better parent. I feel like I show up for others in a better way. I have a much better view of the world. Even though I see the darkness, you can see the light and be part of the progress too.
Yeah.
And we really need everyone to take action. I think that I'm getting not a lot of flack, but I've had quite a few comments, you know, allies, not enough, strong enough word for what we need white people to do right now. Hmm. And I agree, because, you know, historically it hasn't been used great in the race space. Like, I'm an ally, which, first of all, you don't get to call yourself one. But second, you need to take action, right? Educate yourself first, so you show up intentionally. Like, read a book, a podcast. We have tons of resources we've recommended on our podcast. But do some tough work. And we're not talking days. We're talking hours of reading. You know, get a base level of knowledge, and then do something with that information.
Yeah.
And that means share it with somebody. Share it publicly, privately. Talk to your kids about it. Whatever makes sense for you, but you can make a difference from your individual spot in society. And I think that's what people need to understand, is they really do have a lot more power individually than sometimes they think.
Yeah, I think that's so important, that people don't discount how impactful each individual movement forward. I mean, honestly, it takes so many people to build a house, and all of the small things that people do to get the bricks in place, lay the foundation, the electrical work, the plumbing, everybody is necessary. And think about how beautiful at the end of it works. If one person didn't do their part, something is missing and will not structurally be well for that home, right? So, I mean, we're all needed. Every little bit makes a difference. I think it's so important that we don't miss out on that, and keep it in mind when we think, oh, this isn't a huge deal, or I don't have to do this right now. I mean, honestly, every little bit counts. It really does.
Yeah. Couldn't agree more. This has been so fun. I feel like I could always talk to you for hours about this stuff. So listeners, there'll be more Erica in the future. We are for sure, because of the wild success of our Unpacking Privilege and Unpacking Racism programs in the past, and knowing that organizations really want to be intentional in the future, we will be bringing that back. So be looking out for that. We're going to do kind of a late summer, early fall series. Because we're learning these 1-2 hour, even 3 hour workshops are just whetting people's appetite. And we're getting responses of like, I want to learn more. When are you doing this again? So there's so much more that we can cover beyond this conversation, and take you deeper into your understanding. So stay tuned for that. We'll link to that in the show notes with more information on how you can get involved in Eric and I's learning programs that we'll be doing virtually for the foreseeable future.
That's right.
But I know I so enjoy those times. I learn so much from the participants and from you. They're just such rich conversations, and I think ones that are optimistic too.
Yeah.
We both have went through quite a bit of racism education, and it can be pretty grim and dark. I mean, to your point about Black History Month, I remember you learn Martin Luther King, but then you learn, slavery and just all the details. We like to keep it real. Like, this is a part of our past, but more importantly, like, what do we do with this information now that you're educated? How do you show up as an ally? So stay tuned for that. I know that's something I'm already looking forward to.
Yeah. I think it's really energizing. I appreciate not walking away from our workshops feeling drained. I actually feel like, wow, this is so cool. I love when I see that the light bulb has gone on for some people and they're asking some really critical questions, or that they have some powerful takeaways. That gives me hope, and I love being a part of seeing that happen. Yeah, for sure.
It's cool. Yeah, the response is, this was so uncomfortable, but sign me up again.
Yeah.
Those are my favorite. I have so much work to do, but yes. I'm excited. Those are real. You can tell people are on the journey. Once you're on the journey, it's not an easy journey to get off of, because once you see it, you can't unsee it. So
yep.
I'm thankful that we get to do this work together. It's really, it's really fun. Meaningful. Awesome. Yep. Well, Erica, it's always a blast to be with you. Thank you for sharing your time with our listeners today, and to be continued for a part 3 someday.
There you go. Thanks so much for having me here. This was fun.
Did you know that you can find all 5 seasons of our 50+ episodes at nextpivotpoint.com? There you can sign up for our Lead Like an Ally Inclusive Leadership Program and our Unpacking Racism Program, and order our new book, Lead Like an Ally. I appreciate you listening to this episode. Who do you know that needs to hear this message? Hit the share button, connect with me on LinkedIn, simply search Julie Kratz, K-R-A-T-Z. I host this podcast because we're stronger together. We are one.
You can bring your stories to the table as a partner and a host on the Inclusion Catalyst podcast. Visit inclusioncatalyst.com and click the link that says join us as a guest host.
And that's it for this episode of Inclusion Catalyst. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe and share with your friends and colleagues.